So we've got Sydney waiting patiently on the phone, and
we
I want to end this discussion, and maybe end is not the best word. Maybe we just pause right now so that
put
we
a pin
can get
in
to
it.
Sydney.
We're parking lotting it.
Maybe we just rest it right now,
sure.
And I'm sure there are listeners out there amongst our thousands of listeners going, who is this?
Both of them.
Who is this Dr. Vega, and what does she know? So let's just congratulate.
What is she talking about her?
Let's just congratulate Dr. Vega, who has been selected to join the 2019 cohort at the Institute for Emerging Leaders in Online Learning. So this is a partnership between
she
the Online Learning
talking about,
Consortium
y'all.
And the University of Central Florida. They serve the developmental needs of emerging leaders responsible for a variety of digital learning initiatives in higher education. So
I know, girl boss.
So at least one of us knows what we're talking about in here. So
perfect.
Thank you. So we are privileged to have you in here with us, Dr. Vega. Thank you so very much.
So
and now,
super. Let's transition because I can't wait to talk to Sydney. And let me give our listeners like a little backstory.
Yeah, please tell us a little bit about Sydney.
How we found Sydney, who is like, you know, we're so excited to have her on the show and she's been so gracious. But we were conducting this national scan and we were taking the team and saying, okay, we've done Georgia and we've provided a lot of service here, but we need to look with a national eye and see who are influencing, you know, education initiatives and innovations across the country, and how do we learn from them and partner with them. So one of our team who was charged with looking at the great state of Nebraska happened upon Sydney on Twitter and saw that she happened to be the teacher of the year for the state. And after I did a little Twitter stalking, which is totally normal and fine, I realized that she is a Georgia native, and so I reached out to her and just DM'd her and said, listen, we would love to have you on. So so we are really pleased to have Sydney, and let me just give a quick little introduction and then I can kind of let Sydney introduce herself as well. But Sydney is a Georgia native and a graduate of the University of Georgia, a fellow USG institution. She is the 2019 Nebraska Teacher of the Year, and she currently teaches ninth grade English and partners with colleagues as an instructional coach at Lincoln High School, which is the largest and most diverse school in Nebraska's capital city. So we are so excited to have Sydney on the show today, and we're going to welcome her now. So, hey, Sydney, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank y'all so much for having me.
It's such a great thing, and I'm so happy when I hear you say thank y'all. It means we're home.
Welcome.
So, Sydney,
thank you. I'm excited.
Did we leave anything out from your introduction that you would like our listeners to hear about you, or maybe just a little bit of a brief overview of how you ended up out in Nebraska?
Sure. So it's kind of a strange story. When I was at the University of Georgia, I had a summer where I didn't really have anything going on. And, you know, growing up in Eatonton, there's not a ton to do there.
No, you don't say.
It's a great place to live. Rent in Athens is pretty expensive, and so it was either stay in Athens and work a summer job and maybe take some summer classes that I didn't necessarily need, or move back home with my parents for the summer. And then a third option appeared, which was go work at a summer camp in Nebraska. I have a family member who met his wife working at a summer camp in Pennsylvania, and life ended up with them in Nebraska, and so he's actually the ropes course director at YMCA Camp Kittaki and invited me to apply and come work there as a summer camp counselor. And so I did that, and that is where I ended up meeting my husband. He actually now works full-time for camp as a program director, and that is what brought me to Nebraska to begin with about 5 years ago.
So we have your husband to blame for why your amazing teaching talent has now left the state.
A little bit. It's funny that before I came up to Nebraska for the first time, my mom had what she called a nightmare that I met someone at summer camp.
Very prophetic.
And ended up living here. But my whole family adores him. He's really great. It's cool that we both work with kids just in
Absolutely.
Really different ways. And so he's such a great resource for me in terms of, like, sort of unpacking everything from the day. He has great ideas of, like, really fun, engaging ways to teach based on what he does with outdoor education. And so it's a cool balance that we have.
Amazing.
Very cool. So real quick, if for our listeners out there, if you're listening right now and you have a question for Sydney, we are monitoring Twitter. We're on the hashtag iTeachLive. So go ahead and shoot us your questions if you are near a phone. Anissa's ready on the phone. We are at 470-KSU-COOL. That's 470-578-2665. We can go ahead and test Anissa's phone monitoring and management skills again. So that's it. So there we go. So Sydney, this is Andy. Thank you again for joining this morning. Tell us a little bit about, you know, you told us how you got to Nebraska. Tell us about your teaching, what you were teaching, and then what got you specifically into instructional coaching.
Sure. So currently I teach ninth grade English, here at Lincoln High. I think that I teach the best kids in the whole world, and that's sort of how I ended up in this position of being Teacher of the Year. In terms of instructional coaching, it really kind of started organically when a new teacher was hired in our department, and she was really struggling, because often teaching is something that we sort of do in the dark. We tuck away into our own classrooms, we shut the door, we cover up any windows into the classroom, and we're not really sure if we're doing the thing right. We feel like all of our mistakes are just us and everybody else has it figured out. Why can't I get it right? And so one of my passions has been to sort of pull back the curtain on teaching and make it something that we do socially. I think that's better for our mental wellness and our social wellness, but also it's what's better for our kids. And so when this new teacher came to Lincoln High and was sort of floundering, she was right next door, and so I could hear through the wall how badly things were going for her. And my first instinct was to tell her, come into my classroom. You can come in anytime you want. Sit wherever. You can stay for 20 seconds. You can stay the whole period. And then ask me anything you want to ask me. It's not going to hurt my feelings. I know where I have room to grow, and I'm excited to hear anybody's feedback. Mm-hmm. And to my surprise and delight, she reciprocated and said, well, hey, you come in whenever you want. Stay as long as you want. Tell me anything. I need advice. And that open door relationship between the two of us really turned into a partnering as coaches. And so she was able to steal ideas from me, pick up on little techniques, little strategies, and I was able to take away from the good things that she was doing and also hopefully share some advice that was decent. But she now, I would say, is one of the strongest teachers in our building. She does an incredible job of connecting with kids and building relationships. She's super thoughtful about her lesson planning, making sure that everything connects and has meaning. And so I really dedicate it to that power of having a trusted partner where, I don't know if y'all are into cult of pedagogy, but that idea of finding your marigold, finding your person who's going to grow you and be somebody that you can really go to for advice and actually take that advice. So when our district started leaning into this idea of everybody needs a coach, no one is doing it perfectly, and we all need help, some of us, you know, more urgently than others, but certainly all of us need that assistance. I was asked be an instructional coach for our building along with two other teachers here, and so we're very lucky that we have this cohort of instructional coaches, and so we sort of all have our areas of expertise, whether it's technology, strategies for building engagement and opportunities to respond, if it's planning good questions, and so we're able to partner with teachers in our building and help them meet their own personalized goals that they have for themselves. And I think it's done a lot in terms of building relationships amongst the staff, where we're not just hiding out in the classroom during our plan period, and instead we're seeking out those opportunities for help. It's cool, too, because I think, you know, as we've worked with teachers, they're seeing that value in the time that we're spending. And so it's picking up in terms of word of mouth, because people don't feel as if their time has been wasted or they're not getting anything out of it. The other cool thing is that I think then those people feel empowered to coach others. And so that organic spreading of coaching is continuing as people sort of get used to the idea of these conversations, and we're all working to help each other. And so that's really cool and something I'm passionate about, because I think, you know, everybody needs a coach no matter what career path you're in, but especially when we're doing something so important as educating our kids, it is so vital that you're able to be vulnerable and say, hey, I need help. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So Jamila Culpert tweeted us, and she'd like to know, and so would I, being Teacher of the Year, how do you manage being a classroom teacher at Teacher of the Year level and an instructional coach?
So that's another one. I was originally approached by my principal, and he asked if I would be an instructional coach for the building full time, and I just couldn't do it. I love being in the classroom. I feel like that is what gives me life and energy. And, you know, I have a really hard time, especially this time of year, thinking about this community of learners that I've created in my classroom and how, you know, come May, we won't be together anymore. We'll never all be in that room learning together again. And I just couldn't give that up. And so I said, I'd love to do instructional coaching part time. Luckily the district approved it, and that really actually kind of paved the way for us to have multiple coaches in the building. But I think it's honestly the way that districts should be doing coaching. Mm-hmm. Having my own classroom still and teaching my own lessons, I think lends credibility to me as a coach, because when I'm helping someone, I'm not just telling them about a strategy that I read in an article or saw on Twitter. Instead, I'm saying, here's the strategy that I read about, and here's how it worked in my classroom, and these are the times that I fell on my face with it, and I'm doing it again tomorrow. Do you want to come watch?
Yeah, you've got street cred.
Yeah, well, and I think the empathy that comes with that, you know, for us, and I teach being coaches and not having quote-unquote classrooms of our own, we throw ourselves at the mercy of whatever we can do to plug in, because it's so important.
Right.
Because we remember being on the receiving end of coaching. You know, I've said before, Andy was one of the first folks I've ever had in my classroom as a, you know, mid-level teacher who was my coach. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, if you've been on the receiving end of that, you know, you can sniff out somebody who is not legitimate and doesn't carry that empathy and understanding in
very
a
quick.
Second, right? And then uh-huh. you're just, not even are you closed off to coaching, but then you're sort of like even building up a higher wall so that you're not reflecting on practice anymore. So I think that you hit the nail on the head for sure, that that's a great model that people should be diffusing.
For sure. I think it's hard to say, well, what do you know, when I'm inviting you in to watch and I'm admitting all the flaws and faults that I continue to have that I'm working on. And so I think it's a cool way to bridge that gap and make it more accessible and inviting for other teachers to participate.
Yeah, and I know, you know, a couple of years ago, I think it was sort of floating around Twitter and other places, but anybody who reads the Cult of Pedagogy blog or listens to her podcast, she talked about pineapple charts, and it was sort of this idea of like social collaborative learning and open door policies, and that you just kind of put your name on a board somewhere in a shared space for teachers in the building and say, hey, Thursday from 10 to 11, I'm doing this lesson. I'd love for you to come in and give me feedback. And so there is some organization you can do to it, or you can actually just be totally organic with it and say during your planning period, like find a place to sit, you know, like find a place wherever. Awesome.
Absolutely.
So what would you say, Sydney, for you are some of the things that, you know, I heard you say mental, emotional, professional well-being. Have you seen some of those things not come to fulfillment in yourself? And does that lead you to supporting others? Or what have you seen in other teachers? We certainly see it a lot with the folks that we work with, sort of the fatigue of initiatives and the fatigue of teaching in general. It's just a hard profession because you put your whole heart into something and then you're just asked every day to do more and more and more. So any examples you can give, or just, you know, thoughts about that well-being and that sort of being well-rounded in your supports?
Absolutely. So an article summarizing some research from the Buffett Early Childhood Institute at the University of Nebraska was recently published. And so their research really focused on early childhood teachers in terms of well-being and depression, and the numbers were pretty alarming. They found that 85% of early childhood educators reported some depressive symptoms during the week prior to taking the survey, and about 1 in 10 reported clinically significant depressive symptoms.
Wow.
So I would be very interested in them expanding that research beyond just early childhood and looking at, you know, middle grade, secondary.
Absolutely.
To see if those numbers remain the same, because I imagine that they would. You know, it's one of those things where if we're not taking care of ourselves, it's really hard to take care of others.
Yes.
And as you've mentioned, we're asked to do so much for our students, and often there's not necessarily space that's being made for us to be able to give more. We have students, you know, at Lincoln High, where I teach, across our district, across our state, and across our country, who are coming from situations of trauma every single day. And we're expecting them to walk in the door and be able to, like, shelve that so that they can focus on learning. But the reality is, often that is just not possible. We can't expect that of our students when they're coming from such tough circumstances. And so we try to have this trauma-informed teaching where we're teaching that social and emotional health to our students, and we're trying to teach them how to engage in conversations with each other, how to build relationships with their peers and with other adults. But we also have to recognize that teachers are often absorbing that secondary trauma, and that does lead to that compassion fatigue where, you know, I go home and my husband and I, we take our dog on a walk every day, and I feel like I just spill out all of the things, all the hurt that I've absorbed from my kids that day. And to me, that is what makes teaching hard. You know, in college, when you're going through your certification classes, so much of the focus is on, oh, there's so much grading. Oh, lesson planning is so challenging. There's not enough hours in the day for it. But the thing that to me is really difficult is all the things that you can't control and you can't change for your kids.
Right.
When, you know, they're coming in late and you ask them why they're late every day, and they say, because I don't have electricity, and so I don't have an alarm clock that can wake me up. Mm-hmm. And I have to take 4 buses to get to school in the morning, because here in Lincoln, we don't actually have school buses that run routes regularly.
Sure.
For the majority of our students. And so they're taking city buses, and some of them are getting on their first bus before I even wake up in the morning.
So it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up that specific, you know, student needs of something. Just last week here in the Metro Atlanta area, Fulton County Schools announced a partnership with an app called Purposity. And mm-hmm. from their development team, Purposity means the combination of purpose and generosity. And so just last week, I was able to go on there, and I think it would be so great if every school district would partner with them to do this work, because it's no longer like, hey, support our, you know, foundation or donate to the PTA, but fed through social workers at all of these schools, very specific needs are listed. And so I can see right now for our Fulton County School District, there's 11 community needs. One of them talks about a student needing a new mattress as they transition out of homelessness. One of them is about needing bedding. One of them that I fulfilled last week was about a child that just needed a pack of clean underwear because they didn't have that. And so there's a specific amount, and you can meet a very specific need. And I think the whole idea behind it is that if you know about a specific need, most people will want to meet that need. But when it's a general sort of, you know, we just have kids in need, there's nowhere, you
right.
can't take a bite
it's
out of
hard
that elephant.
To pick yeah. up where exactly are my dollars going.
That's right. So I think it's great. I mean, especially for districts who might be in rural or more spread areas, certainly Nebraska would be one of these, but I'm even thinking of like South Georgia or, you know, Appalachian regions where there's just not an overabundance. There are typically some food deserts. There are typically places where people don't have access. I mean, the nearest Walmart, it feels like you're going to town, is an hour away.
Right.
So I think that it would be so great to see more districts partner in that way, not just for student needs, but also for teacher needs. we know, and we're, you know, little sweater vest protest moment. We know that teachers are not paid enough to actually survive well on the pay that they receive. And so how great would it be not to just say, well, here's a pack of markers, teacher, but to really meet a personal need that they would have as well. So mm-hmm. I think that's really compelling.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Super compelling. And I just, you can hear your passion for it and your heart for it as you talk. And I think it's something that resonates so much with all of us who have ever been in a situation where we've seen either ourselves, our peers, or our students struggle. You know, nobody goes into education to be a millionaire, to be, you know, showered in accolade, right? We go into it because we want to make a difference in the lives of others. And then you can't help but be personally impacted by all those situations that you know.
Mm-hmm. And I heard you say that you take your dog for a walk, for example. What are some, if it's not too personal, some other ways that you self-care so that you can come back and be so strong in the classroom again?
Yeah, no. So the daily walk with my dog and my husband, and we talk about everything under the sun. He jokes that I'm way too detailed and that I'm practically saying, well, I got out of my car and I took 18 steps to the door. So we have that. I recently, about a year ago, started doing yoga, and I've found that that's been really good because I think I hold so much tension in my body based on the needs of my students and worrying about are those needs being met. And so yoga has been really great for that. And I have the best yoga teacher, and she also works at the coffee shop across the street, and that's great. And then honestly, just like really making sure that I'm continuing to build a life for myself outside of school. Being that we are in the area where we worked at summer camp, and summer camp is such a great experience in that it brings so many people together who have similar passions. A ton of people go from working at YMCA Camp Kitaki to being teachers, and spending so much time together summer after summer, we've really just built this strong bond. And so we have weekly meetups where every Thursday night we go to supper and catch up with each other. You know, we get together and watch Game of Thrones every Sunday.
Yes. Do you also watch Lords and Ladles? Because you should.
Oh, God.
No, you should not.
She
don't
doesn't.
Do it.
I got a dollar that says she's...
All your friends will leave you.
Right now her eyes are rolling. You just can't see that.
Sydney, I feel a connection with you. This is Stephanie. I know that you and I should form a deeper friendship and watch Lords and Ladles together as stress relief.
Don't do it.
Never going to happen.
No,
never
and so
happen.
I think those things are really important, though. So much of teaching is we're just constantly giving to other people, and we do it because we love the impact that we're making, and we deeply care about the students and the families and the community that we're serving. But it's so equally important to continue sort of filling our own cups up so that we are able to keep giving to those people that we love so much.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, Sydney, this is Andy again. And let me just remind everyone, for our listeners, if you're just joining us, you're listening to iTeach Live, and we're speaking with Sydney Jensen, the 2019 Nebraska Teacher of the Year. So, Sydney, my wife is a high school counselor, and she started out as a counselor for kids that had been abused. And you know, an early struggle that we had, and I think a lot of young teachers, and not just young, but early in teaching professionals have, is how to not bring all of this home. So I know self-care is a lot of that, but do you have any particular strategies or anything that ways that you know, I think we all like to think we're doing all that we can, but I know I had several conversations in the past with my wife about, no, we can't adopt everyone and bring them all to our house. That's not going to solve everyone, or really probably anyone's problems. That's not what they need, and that's not what we need. So how do these people, because it is a lot, and we deal with so much more than curriculum, and how do you draw that line between I'm doing all I can, and all I can is the best, and that's what I can do for my kids. Is it, and the answer may just be that self-care, but I just want to throw it out there,
yeah,
because it's, I know it's hard for people to know to be able to draw that line and know that what they're doing is what they need.
Or sometimes even recognize that they haven't been drawing the line.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think for me, a lot of it is that I really don't draw that line. I think I would be a little concerned if I was able to just shut it off when I get home. And so I don't necessarily try to do that, but I do try to practice just, you know, when something is happening with one of my students that I want to be able to help or change or make better, you have to just keep asking the question why until you get to something that you can affect. And so, you know, when a student is living in intense poverty, then, you know, the question, why are they in that situation? I can't really impact that necessarily, but I can connect them with community resources that are going to be able to set them up with food for their family. I can connect them with our Lincoln High clothes closet to make sure that they have those immediate needs being met. I can commit myself to checking in with them every day and finding out if there's another need that I can set them up with somebody. And so as long as I'm doing those things and I really know my kids, then I can sleep at night and I'll be okay. And so, you know, I had a student who was having a hard time having some of those needs met. And so I was able to, from some community resources, get some things for him. And then I thought to myself, I'll just put him in his book bag when he leaves to go to lunch, because he leaves it in my classroom. And then I thought, wait a second, does he have a book bag? And it broke my heart that I didn't necessarily know 100% the answer to that.
Right.
And so that was hard. And the next day I came to school and was so relieved that, yes, he did have a book bag. But the night before, my husband was digging through the closet trying to find his old book bag from college to say, he can have this one. I don't need it. Right. And so I think that I'm really lucky in terms of, you know, my partnership with my husband, that he really gets it and has that same passion and fire for students and for kids that I do, and we just really work as a team. And the other thing is, he's really good at saying, you're doing the best that you can, and that's all that anybody can ask. And you know, it's so clear how much you love your students, and that makes it okay. So I could probably do a better job of trying to leave some of that behind when I go home at the end of the day, but also I know that it's such a strong connection that my husband and I have in terms of our just like hunger to help people. And so I don't know that I would be fulfilled if I was able to do that.
Your community is lucky to have you, Sydney.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. So we had a couple of questions from Twitter. So Chris McBride has asked about advice you would give teachers who say that they don't have time to collaborate. Anything you have you dealt with that, or what do you think about some teachers who just say, I just don't have the time to do this kind of collaboration to improve their game?
Sure. I think, you know, we are so lucky in this day and age to have all the technology that we do. And that can make collaboration something that you can do sort of remotely and not have to be in the same room at the same time to make it work. Though it is obviously better to be able to, you know, have a common plan and sit down and really communicate with each other face to face. But I think, you know, with sharing Google Docs and things like that, that really makes it easier. The other thing that I've encountered, and I hate to say it, is that there are some teachers who just don't want to collaborate with you. And so it's easier to say, well, we don't have time. I can't make space for it. Things like that. And so part of that, I think, and part of what I've had to learn is finding people who are, you know, on the bus with you. They are headed to the same destination. And those are the people that are going to try and make it work, even if it's that we have to type notes back and forth to each other on a Google Doc. But the bottom line, too, is that it is really hard. We're looking at sky-high class sizes and minimal work time for teachers that isn't taken up with things like meetings and other, you know, IEP meetings, staff meetings, things like that. And so it is really challenging. I think you just have to make it a priority. And even if it's something that you commit to once a week or twice a month, that's better than nothing. And, you know, I'll admit my first 2 years, I really struggled because I was sharing everything that I was creating with other teachers, and I didn't feel that reciprocated, and that can be hard. And you could lean towards, well, I'm just going to stop sharing. But then I thought to myself, you know what? I would be working just as hard with or without gaining resources and materials from other teachers. And so I have to believe that the things that I'm sharing are for that sort of highest good. If they use them, that's awesome. If they don't, that's okay too, because we don't all have to do it exactly the same way. But I think that willingness to collaborate says a lot about a person and their commitment to being the best teacher that they can possibly be.
Absolutely. And do you have, you know, going back to finding those that want to work with you, so we oftentimes struggle with the ones that don't, right? So we can't we can't just leave them behind. And so what are some strategies? I don't even know if you've, you know, this may be a big curveball, that have you employed strategies, or do you have conversations with your school leaders about how do we you know, incentivize or encourage or, you know, get these teachers who maybe view coaching as negative or as punitive, how do we bring them on and, you know, how do we address the culture, you know, that
I mean, you kind of hit it right there. That's a culture thing. And I think you build that culture by starting with the people who are willing and are excited for it, and trusting that those people are going to go out and share that positive experience. The other thing is, I think you've got to build a social relationship with people before they're going to be willing to have that professional relationship sometimes.
Right.
And so within my own department, it's inviting people to eat lunch. Like, hey, where do you eat lunch? You should come in here and eat with us. And, you know, we start out talking about things like Game of Thrones, and then gradually it turns into and shifts into a conversation about what's happening in our classroom. And so that turns into sort of this informal coaching session for all of us. And I think that that's sometimes the way to get people on board, is to make it really informal, where it's not, come to this meeting and we're going to talk about why coaching is important and why you should be collaborating with other people, but rather come in and let's talk about the things that we have in common, and then maybe we'll talk about teaching too. And hopefully that sort of becomes this gradual build up to where a person would then be willing.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I like that. You know, and I think, too, we shouldn't underestimate the power of a Starbucks card and a jeans day, yeah, all right? So, like,
yeah,
lift the culture up with a little bit of jeans and a little bit of coffee. No one ever hated it.
Yeah.
And I think focusing on strengths first. You know, no one needs somebody coming into their classroom and saying, here's a list of all the things that you could be doing better. And instead focusing on, you do this one thing really well, could I tell this other person about it, and maybe they could come watch you?
Yeah, I'm like, how rude for people to... my Mimi would have hit me upside the head if I had ever imagined to walk into somebody else's home or classroom or any space and say, hey, by the way, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong.
Yeah.
I also think that, like, sandwich approach to feedback is lame. I don't think we should have to put... you know, anything that we're trying to critique or provide constructive feedback for in between two other good comments, that feels contrived and a little patronizing to me. But I think just being authentic and knowing the territory that you're in with the person that you're coaching, and you have to be able to pick up on the cues of the person, whether they're ready and open for feedback at that moment or they are not.
But also consider learner agency in that, in the sense of, you know, ask. And I'm sure you do this, Sydney. Ask them, what are your pain points in your classroom?
Right.
You know, let's start with those and move from there.
Yeah.
That's
great. Yeah. It's crazy. So I know, how much time do you have, Sydney? I know.
I've got about 3 minutes, and then I have to go teach a class.
Yeah, time to wrap it. Sydney's got to do her day
job. I know, let me just say to our listeners out there, and we'll put it out on Twitter, Sydney is also interested. We talked about mental health and social-emotional learning, but in trauma-informed teaching as well, and I wanted to get into it. I don't think we have time, but here as we are – you know, this crazy landmark date 20 years ago, you know, Columbine happened. And, and these are things that, you know, when we were in high school, we didn't really have to think about trauma-informed teaching and how do we teach and lead kids who are dealing with trauma. And so if you can speak to that very briefly, or if we can just say we'll throw it up on Twitter and we'll finish the conversation there. But I certainly wanted to throw it out there. Any sure. thoughts or anything you wanted to say about that?
So, you know, I think any sort of initiative that we're going to take statewide or nationwide in terms of mental health supports, especially for our students, is going to require some sort of legislation, because that's going to cost money, and that's just the bottom line. I wish that we had the same types of check-ins for student mental health that we do for physical health, mm-hmm. Where, you know, yearly students are going in to get their eyesight and their hearing and their spine checked for scoliosis. We should have those same sorts of check-ins for kids in terms of their mental health, because they need that support just as much.
Absolutely.
In terms of teachers, I'm really lucky in LPS. Part of our benefits package includes a number of free counseling sessions each year, and so that is a really great thing that we're able to offer as a larger district, but those smaller districts, rural districts, don't have that same ability. And so that is something too, that when we're acknowledging that teachers are absorbing a lot of trauma from our own students and from their experiences, we've got to be able to support our teachers through that, and that's one of the ways that we can do it. But it takes legislation, because it takes money.
Yep. Absolutely.
We're so impressed with you, Sydney.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
The amazing work that
Thank
you're doing.
Thank y'all so much for having me. It's always fun to talk about the thing that I love the most. So.
Absolutely.
I can tell you love it. We love you for it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
All right, well, have fun with those kids today, Sydney. And for everybody listening, please make sure to chime in with her on Twitter. Stay connected with her. And I can't believe I'm saying this out loud. Go Dogs.
Yeah.
Go Dogs.
Yeah. And thanks again, Sydney. At any point that you need to hang up, you just go ahead and hang up. But I wanted to say, if you want to talk to Sydney or connect with Sydney, excuse me, on Twitter, she's at Sydney C. Jensen. That's SYDNEYC, the letter, and then JENSON, Sydney C. Jensen, the 2019 Nebraska Teacher of the Year. Thank you so much. Your ninth graders and Lincoln Public Schools certainly are lucky to have you. And she just left us, so she's got to get back to class.
She is dedicated.
Thank you, everyone listening that sent us questions on the hashtag #ITeachLive. We appreciate your involvement, as does Sydney. Reach out, tell her thanks. She's fantastic.
Or just send her a high five, a virtual high five.
Well, and I mean, there's so many teachers out there that Sydney represents that are doing the same work incredibly amazing. And we're so lucky that we get a viewpoint into all that hard work and that amazing work going on. So if you are a teacher who knows a teacher, or you are a teacher that's passionate about something that you're doing or the work that's going on in your school or district, we want to talk to you too. You don't have to be a teacher of the year.
No,
you just have to be somebody with passion and with heart and dedication to not only doing the best you can, but always be improving and learning more and growing more. And that's what teaching's all about.
Or maybe you want to nominate a teacher to come speak with or to speak with us. Maybe you know someone who's great who doesn't want to announce the, you know, who are, you know, a little more are humble.
Humble. Yeah.
Humble brags.
Yeah,
speaking of which.
iTeach Live is produced by the instructional technology coaches from iTeach at Kennesaw State University, with the cooperation of the Instructional Technology Department, the Bagwell College of Education, and KSU Owl Radio. You can reach out to them for more information, questions, or comments at their website, iteach.kennesaw.edu, or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at KSU iTeach.